You've probably seen the sign in a business here and there. This is a nonprofit business, but it's not meant to be. It's clearly a joke in that context. But there are many, many organizations set up to offer their services to the world without the expectation of making a profit. Enough money to cover costs, yes, but not a profit. No shareholders to provide dividends for and all of that. Oregon nonprofits get a chance to gather and compare notes next month in Medford at the Oregon Nonprofit Leadership Conference. Our guest is the co-chair of that conference and the chair of the conference program committee. He is also the development director for the Mount Ashland Association. He's wearing none of those hats while he's sitting here in the studio. Michael Stringer, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Michael, welcome.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Thanks for having me today.
Always good to have you. Tell us the creation story of the conference. There's an interesting history here that's gone through quite a few permutations, it sounds like.
Right. Well, a number of nonprofit leaders got together 26 or so years ago to consider where we were as a group. And we really had to think about how can we create a better sense of a community for the nonprofit organizations in our region and our state, as well as to provide leadership. I mean, I think that none of us went to school for the non. Well, I think that there are nonprofit management degrees now. There weren't 26 years ago, and we continue to 26 years later try to help people with education and some sort of camaraderie to bring real expertise to our field.
Is management different between nonprofits and for-profit companies?
Yes. Our revenue streams are very different. Our fiduciary responsibility to the public is different. Our needs and our clients are quite different. Now, there's some gray areas, and I think, you know, you mentioned the Mount Ashland Association. There's a number of ski areas that operate as for-profit institutions. This one happens to operate as a nonprofit organization. So the waters have been muddied somewhat over the years, and yet we still have a very simple mandate to provide services to our community, and we can't rely on traditional revenue streams of, you know, products and sales and such like that, because for the most part, we have to spend most of the time focused on our mission.
That's an interesting point you bring up, particularly with that business, ski areas, because I guess we've gotten so used to the idea of the Mount Ashland ski area being nonprofit. Forget the fact that it is nonprofit, therefore needs a position like yours as development director. And so you spend time beating the bushes for grants or loans or what?
That's right. Well, you know, in 1993, when the Mount Ashland Association was formed, it was formed because the for-profit model just wasn't working. A number of groups that had tried to create profit there, and it's just a challenging place to create profit because of our low latitude and our low altitude, being in southern Oregon. And so the organization has thrived over, well, in a number of years since 1993 because of the generous support that the organization receives from the community, much like the United Way and you name your organization. And we all rely on the generosity of our public. And you mentioned grants. That's definitely an area where we spend a lot of time as an organization or as a group of organizations. It's a very important revenue stream for our group.
And it seems like even within the nonprofit world, there are a number of models for how you structure the people who are interested in what you do so that they will continue to provide some money to them. I mean, we're talking on public radio, which obviously works on a nonprofit model as well with some government support and mostly an in-kind support in our case. But then you have some organizations that have members and they pay regular dues, and then there's some where you just go out and look for donations. I mean, it seems like even within the nonprofit world, there are a bunch of different models for how to fundraise.
Yes, absolutely. And a lot of it comes from your mission, the kinds of people that you're serving. I mean, some nonprofits just have a challenging time through direct mail or through memberships, really creating enough revenue. So they look to governments, local, state, federal, county governments for support to provide essential services. And in some ways, nonprofits have taken over for government services that governments used to provide. And I actually prefer it this way because it's a it's more of a grassroots effort to provide a solution to a problem that exists or an issue or something exciting that exists within our community that we can rally behind and help support. So, yes, you have some groups that are very focused on grants and really an ongoing cycle of grants whereby you're applying for grants, implementing the grant, and then reporting on the grant. I would say that most nonprofits do have some sort of grant support. Some nonprofits really focus on a membership model. I think that there are a number of groups here in our area that do rely on that membership model, and that would include like the Nature Conservancy, for example, the Southern Oregon Land Conservancy, and to a certain extent, the Mount Ashland Association, the one that I'm most familiar with at the moment. And then, of course, there's other areas where, and I think that corporate sponsorships are also another area. And, you know, I think that, you know, public radio is a great model. I mean, I think that your members, your listeners are supporting something that they really value. And so that way we're all benefiting from the thing that we support. So you name it, the schools, foundations, whatever it might be, we all need to communicate with our community, and that's part of what we focus on at our conference.
Which, again, you know, it's an interesting thing to think about, and I guess it didn't hit me squarely in the face until I had some time to think about it this morning, but that you provide services for people who generally are not the ones paying for those services. And so that in itself is a disconnect from the business world, where if I want you to fix my car, I pay you to fix my car. This is where services that is delivered to one party, but the income comes from another one.
Right. And that's just the nature of where we are as a society at this point, I believe, because there's just always going to be folks in our society that need a lift up. And there are groups and lots of groups organized to help keep those folks get the services that they deserve.
Let's talk about the kinds of services they're delivering when we come back from a break. We'll take a short one now. This is the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio. Michael Stringer is our guest from the Oregon Nonprofit Leaders Conference. He's the co-chair. We'll take your phone calls and emails if you'd like to join the conversation. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Michael Stringer and you in a minute 25. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about nonprofits and how they operate in the world and what they do when they get together and compare notes, which they will do next month in Medford at the Oregon Nonprofit Leaders Conference. We have the co-chair with us today, Michael Stringer. He's also the chair of the conference program committee, and he works the rest of his time as the development director for the Mount Ashland Association. You can join our discussion on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760 around the region. And by email, jx@jeffnet.org. One of the interesting things I noticed in the history of the Oregon Nonprofit Leaders Conference is that it was created, I think, around 1988, at a time when there were declining government services because of declining timber revenue. It's an interesting thing that nonprofits had to step up to fill some gaps in social services.
Right. As a community, I think that we all can recognize the need to, you know, protect the Pacific Fisher, to protect the libraries. I know that was certainly a hot topic for a number of years. And, you know, the Jackson County Library Foundation is an excellent example of an organization it's seeking grants, it's meeting with local, national, state, federal organizations and foundations, as well as seeking local business and member support. And I think as groups like that have grown and matured over the last 30 years, we've found that the services have been returned. You know, we're seeing an increased number of hours at our public libraries. And I think that that's a huge service that the nonprofit organizations provide to our community. And in a certain way, it's, you know, timber receipts, it's always something that's nice to be able to have contributing to our county and county coffers. But we also have to look around us as a community sometimes and say, what are our highest priorities? And, you know, how do we protect our forests? How do we protect our native species? How do we protect our important social services like basic food deliveries, food banks, and all kinds of different services that, again, we did rely on, and we continue to rely on, and we may continue to see cuts in those services, and we'll probably have to lean more on our nonprofit community, which is why I think that this organization has really been strong for the last 26 years in helping organizations that, as I mentioned before, don't go to school or don't receive any traditional training to become nonprofit leaders, that we get together once a year and provide those services to ourselves.
When you talk about services being provided by nonprofits in lieu of governments providing those services, go a couple different directions with this. The one I want to go into at the moment, though, is about the fact that it seems like the issue is very similar to what happens to government agencies that are providing social services. They get hit pretty hard in recessions because the demand for the services goes up, often while the income to provide those services goes down. And I imagine nonprofits encountered quite a bit of that themselves during the last recession.
Yes. And so grant funding is always a challenge, and there's increasing competition for limited dollars, and we can't always rely on grant making or those traditional sources of dollars. We really have to reach out to our community and do fundraising, and that's challenging. I mean, that is one of the hardest things that new board members or new staff or new nonprofit leaders face, is that they really have to adopt a new model. And I think that, for example, our keynote address at the conference by John Tapoña, he really focuses on, the title of his speech at the conference is the 2050 Economic Outlook: How the Software Revolution, the Global Middle Class, and the Climate Will Shape Our State. And I think that that's a good way to frame the conversation that we are having, because we are having to look at new models of our revenue structure, and for whatever service it is, even beyond the nonprofit sector, the basic service structure is in flux, and we're always looking at finding ways of delivering those services efficiently and with a smile on our face. And we'll get to a little bit of that when we get to our discussion about the program of the conference itself.
Well, as long as you broach the subject now with John Tapoña of Eco Northwest, tell us a bit about him and what his organization is doing.
Right. So the Econ Northwest has a staff of about 40 economists, planners, and policy analysts, and they provide professional consulting services and testimony for a variety of clients around the world. And John himself is he's really directed by evaluations of dropout prevention programs, the impacts of small class sizes in schools, and the efficacy of small schools and such like that. So he really takes a hard look at the efficacy of programs, because, like, for example, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, I mean, they have a real passion for certain programs, but they want to make sure that we're providing those, that the organizations are providing those services efficiently. And so he has a really sort of broad look at outlook on those issues, and I think it helps create a vision for where we need to go as a community, as well as the nonprofit sector, as we age and mature.
So let's pick up his thread. I mean, there are many ways of doing business of all kinds that are changed with the advent of the internet and the many devices to access it. Is this a challenge? Is it an opportunity to nonprofits? Both?
I think that the internet is a wonderful tool for nonprofits, and we do focus on that again in our program, because used effectively, it's a wonderful tool for broadcasting our message. I don't know that it's a great tool for fundraising, and I think that that's also something that's emerging. However, the the tool itself has become, especially social media, for example, has really helped to highlight issues that crop up in our communities, and that's locally, regionally, and globally. And so we have an all day session, for example, on the 21st, the Tuesday, with Blue Marble Creative. It's a group that is coming to. Let's see, I'm going to give their Lisa Mullis and Christine Fisher. They'll be speaking about how to create an effective marketing program. So an entire you'll come away with a plan for revamping the efforts you take, because I think that, you know, it's easy to hop onto Facebook as a development director myself. I know that it's so much easier to hop on Facebook and do a post update or something like that, whereas I really need to be connecting with my donors, my major donors, and letting them know about the great work that we're doing.
Is it somewhat easier to find them with the internet? Is it a little harder to I mean, given the scattered nature of the media landscape, where you don't know if you're talking to people on social media or for lack of a better word, anti-social media, the old stuff. I mean, is it getting harder to figure out where to direct your messages to find them?
There's two ways to answer that question. It is easier to connect with people that have common interests. It's harder to connect with them in a direct way, like direct mail or calling them on the phone, because most people have cell phones that are unlisted, and they also have addresses, and we no longer produce phone books, and we don't, you know, and people don't really subscribe to magazines. So some of those traditional ways that nonprofits have connected with you know, our community and reached out to find new donors, new supporters, new volunteers have gone away, and I think that we do rely more on social media, email, e-blasts, and things like that that are very, very much based in the electronic world.
Michael Stringer is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about nonprofits and how they do business in today's world. He is the conference co-chair of the Oregon Nonprofit Leaders Conference coming to Medford next month. I haven't even given the dates yet. What are the dates of this thing?
The conference is April 20th and 21st. It's a Monday and Tuesday morning, and it's in downtown Medford. We start out at the old Red Lion Hotel, the Inn at the Commons, and that's where our keynote address is, and we have some other events there. But then from there, we move over to the Higher Education Center, the RCC Center there. And
often called the HEC for Higher Education Center, yeah.
Okay, good to know. Thank you. And the Medford Public Library.
You can join this discussion on the Jefferson Exchange. Phone number here, 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org, and you can check out our Facebook page to see a picture of Michael from just a few moments ago. Let's come back to the beginning of just a more general view of nonprofits before we get into the specifics of the conference. Give us an idea of the breadth and depth. I mean, do we have an idea how many nonprofits altogether there are in the state of Oregon and what kinds of things they are generally doing? Do they fall in a couple of major categories, or is it really, really scattered?
That's a great question, and I didn't do my homework on that one, Jeffrey, but I know that there are, you know, thousands, and the number grows every day, and they are providing services for a range of things like human services to the arts, to environmental groups and libraries, and specific issues that come up. I think that I've heard of a number of groups that have come on this program that have formed together as a community of people that are very active about a particular issue. And so I think that that's probably why even if I had done research, it would have been hard for me to answer that question, because it's just...
It's hard to find in a hurry, I have to admit. Yes, I went to the Secretary of State's website myself, and I could have registered a nonprofit right then and there, but wasn't able to find an actual count on the number.
Okay.
But you're saying hundreds, potentially thousands?
Definitely thousands, and some have the golden, so whatever the, you know, the the seal there of the 501c3. And some are just nonprofit organizations that are providing a mission that are providing a service or meeting a mission and weren't able or didn't have the time or don't have the resources to go through the exhaustive process and legal counseling of getting that 501c3 status.
Which is that refers to the section of the tax code that allows the tax exempt status for the nonprofit corporation, 501c3.
Correct.
So now you can be a nonprofit, you're saying, and not be a 501c3.
Yes. I think that there's a number of organizations out there that I think the Ashland Tennis Club, for example, comes to mind. I don't believe that they are a nonprofit, but they do have a fundraiser every year. And I could be wrong about this, so excuse me, Tennis Club, if I'm mistaken. I know that I've seen groups like this where it's a membership-based organization. They are they don't have a 501c3 status, so your donations or your contributions may or may not be tax deductible, so to speak, and therefore, you won't be given some sort of credit for that. However, I have to say that a number of people do, and I think some of the the numbers suggest, the statistics suggest that a huge proportion of the folks that support nonprofit organizations don't itemize their taxes on their federal tax return, and so don't receive any sort of benefit in relation to their donations. And but I think that because these folks they don't have the income level, they see on a day in and day out basis the type of people, the services that are required to keep their community together, be it food banks, United Way, the simple just donation jars that you see in grocery stores and such that seek to support a particular cause. I mean, I just think that it can be a really challenging effort to go through to get that special status when really all you need is just a few hundred or a few thousand dollars. GoFundMe, I think, is another example. People that are ill and have high medical bills, they can create a crowdfunding site where they get help with their medical bills. And that's the sort of spirit of the nonprofit sector. And yet, that person or that group doesn't have a nonprofit status, so to speak.
But the biggest difference for anybody who donates to a 501c3 is that they do have potentially a tax deduction to be had from that donation where they wouldn't with a non-501c3?
Correct. So when you get to large issues like protecting forests or protecting or creating an arts organization or really serving the libraries, you really get to the point where you need to be able to provide that assurance to donors that they will get a tax deduction so that you really will start to see the major gifts and the bequests start to come in and really create a nest egg for the organization.
So the bigger you want to be is more likely to get a 501c3 status.
Yes.
Yeah. You mentioned the Ashland Tennis Club. I wanted to let you off the hook there. Okay. It is, in fact, nonprofit.
Oh.
I don't see 501c3 on there anymore. So, yeah, so you got it right.
Okay.
Let's talk about all these nonprofits across the state of Oregon, about how many send reps to the Nonprofit Leaders Conference on April 20th and 21st in Medford.
We have 350 people attend the conference. Now, 350 includes all of the foundation representatives, and that is a key part of our conference, and we're very proud of that. We do have a number of sponsors. I think that the conference has about... Excuse me. I'm going to look at my budget numbers here. I just want to make sure I get this right. But a huge percentage of our budget comes from the from foundations. So we get about, of our total conference budget, which is about $80,000, $31,000 comes from foundations, and that goes from the Ford Family Foundation, which is in Roseburg, the Cow Creek Umpqua Indian Foundation, the Meyer Memorial Trust, the Oregon Community Foundation. These people are supporting the conference on a very generous level. These groups are also sending foundation reps to come and meet with our attendees, the folks that actually, the paying folks, to meet with. So it's called the Meet the Funder sessions.
And I noticed these. They're like speed dating, aren't they?
Yeah, in some ways. Yeah, we try to slow it down. We have had – it has had a speed dating kind of feel in the past. We really focused on that this year. We added another session of it. So rather than two, we're offering three sessions to spread out the opportunity for folks to really engage with funders, meet them, find out their funding priorities, and then submit a successful application to the right foundation. I think that a lot of us, as we get thrown into this world, there are so many foundations out there, and you know, you can join on to foundation help groups and such like that. But when it really comes down to it, you really need to have that face-to-face time with your with the funders to find out really what are you looking for, what are your priorities, what would a successful application look like when you get one within the deadline, and when is that deadline?
So here again, you get a chance to be face-to-face then with the people who are essentially holding purse strings that you would like to have access to, or at least to be able to have them loosen up long enough to give you a chunk of money for your particular nonprofit.
That's correct. And it's something that we've offered that for a number of years, and we're very proud of that, because it's not only are these organizations and foundations providing generous support for the conference itself, helping to make it happen in the first place, but also showing up and really wanting to engage with the participants and finding out what are their needs. You know, it's their opportunity, too, to find out what are the needs in Southern Oregon, what are the needs in Oregon overall. And I think that really hearing it from the horse's mouth, so to speak, is really, really highly valuable for both sides of the issue or the foundation.
We have more to talk about nonprofits with Michael Stringer. We are going to talk a little bit more about nonprofits generally and a bit more specifically about the upcoming Oregon Nonprofit Leaders Conference for 2015 coming to Medford on April 20th and 21st. Back on the Jefferson Exchange, we'll take your phone calls and emails as well at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. The Jefferson Exchange returns in a minute 30. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about nonprofits and how they go about doing their business, which obviously involves not making a profit at what they do, providing services to groups of people who generally not the ones who fund the services. This is something that will get talked about at the Oregon Nonprofit Leaders Conference, April 20th and 21st in downtown Medford. We have with us today Michael Stringer, who is the Oregon Nonprofit Leaders Conference co-chair. He is also the chair of the conference program committee. And in his spare time, he's the development director for the Mount Ashland Association. You can join our discussion about nonprofits and what they do and what they get out of talking to each other as they do at this conference. 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So we were talking about the roles of nonprofits and all the many things they do across Oregon. You said about 350 attendees come to the conference. There is chance to meet up with the foundation folks. It seems like there are more foundations all the time, and maybe it's just because I read the sports pages, and it seems like everybody who's been playing professional football or baseball for 2 or 3 years starts something like the Tom Brady Foundation. We'll probably see the Marcus Mariota Foundation if he makes it in the NFL for very long, stuff like that. So it seems like there are always new funding sources all the time, but is there this constant churn that goes on between foundations and nonprofits coming into existence and leaving existence?
Yes, I would say less so in the foundation world. However, and some of those sports figures are they have a great deal of income that comes in all of a sudden, and they realize they need to find a way to do some, you know, they look at their tax burden and they think, well, how can I change this? Can I do something besides give all the money to the government? And I think that's where a lot of your millionaires and billionaires come to that realization, that they say, well, you know, let's start a foundation. Let's do something with our with our generous income that we receive, and of course, create a legacy for ourselves going forward. That's probably going to be more in the sensationalist kind of the media kind of stuff, because big sports players do all of a sudden kind of come out of college and all of a sudden they're making a great deal of money. And so I think that we have groups like, especially at our conference, we've had the Oregon Community Foundation, the Ford Family Foundation, the let me pull up my list, but just a number of groups have come over and over, the Calque Umpqua Indian Foundation, and United Way, the Gordon Elwood, the Anime Family Foundation, Bank of the Cascades. I mean, not all of those come every year, but they've had a consistent showing over the years, and I think that there's less of a transition there, I would say.
All right. So, as far as nonprofits, yeah, though, and I broached the question a moment ago about services provided during the recession. I didn't ask about the numbers of nonprofits. I did notice in the job I used to have, working with some nonprofits, that the offices, at least, of some of them were closing in Southern Oregon. And I don't know if any actually just ceased to exist completely. It seems like the Special Olympics didn't even actually hold Olympics sessions for a couple of years, yeah, at least 1 year. So it sounds like the recession hit nonprofits very hard.
Yes, yes. And I think that, again, we talked about grant funding earlier and foundation support. I mean, the corpuses of many of those foundations really were significantly hit by the global recession and the stock market crash, and so to speak, of that the past decade. And they're starting to come back. But in the meantime, nonprofit organizations have really matured and have really focused on major gift fundraising and fundraising in general. And I just want to bring up Gail Perry, one of the folks that's coming, and she's a national speaker. It's someone that I've followed for a number of years as a development professional, and she leads inspirational fundraising workshops and board retreats around the globe, and has this great network. Again, she's connecting with nonprofits, so she understands the challenges that nonprofits are facing on a day-to-day reality, and that includes, I mean, her career started out at Duke University, and there's another example of, you know, universities have really moved towards major gift fundraising because that's how they make big improvements happen on their campuses, much like Southern Oregon University. And
new laboratories and all the things that make a difference.
Correct, which are hugely expensive but very important to the educational process. So she has this great blog. She blogs weekly at firedupfundraising.com. She has a group of you can actually get in on her, like, sort of inner circle, and she helps really coach you through the process of sitting down with someone that you've known for years and years and years, that you think, oh my gosh, why do I have to ask this person for money right now? It's so embarrassing. And I think that's what happens, is with fundraising, your ego can get in the way. And if you can remove your ego and just focus on the organization and what a major gift would do for the beneficiaries of your organization, that really changes the conversation you have with yourself and with your major donor. So Gail's really great. She's going to be there with a couple of sessions. No, excuse me, just a day-long session on the 21st. And I don't have the title of that session, but she's going to be really wonderful. Another person who's really good in that area is Susan Howlett. Susan Howlett's organization is called Strengthening Nonprofits. How relevant there. Uh-huh. So she has a book that I think is really powerful called Boards on Fire, and it's called Inspiring Leaders to Raise Money Joyfully. Right. So there, I'm going to key in on that word joyfully.
Uh-huh.
And I think
that's a big one.
Susan would too. And I think that was very intentional, because if you can come to fundraising with a joyful mindset and a mindset that's very focused on the outcome, you lose a lot of the inhibitions that you have that you thought were going to be such an issue with the conversation you might have with a friend, a colleague, or someone that's been supporting the organization for a long time. I think that a lot of people get a great deal of enjoyment, and I know it's been proven. I've heard lots of studies on NPR. Shankara Vedantam, I think, talks a lot about this. It is a wonderful feeling to be able to support a nonprofit organization in a very generous way. And I think that giving people the opportunity to do that is a really powerful thing. And we have to learn to do that on a regular basis. Stay off Facebook, get back on the phone, remind your donors of the great work that they are supporting, and create success for your organization. And, you know, bring the services to your beneficiaries that you really, really desperately want to do. I mean, that's why we got involved in this. It's passion. It's not because we went to school for it. It's passion.
Stay off Facebook and go back to the phone just because you want to make a more one-on-one connection?
Yes, because Facebook is great about bringing people into your organization and highlighting the issue. But when it comes down to meeting your budget, getting to your meeting your goals, what it comes down to is handshakes, coffee, lunch, personal conversations, golf, snowboarding, skiing in my case,
right.
Getting out and connecting with folks to let them know that this is the experience. This is the Pacific Fisher. This is the amazing tree or the amazing forest that we are going to, we're going to protect together.
So you make the case perhaps in the environment. You talked about ego being an issue here. You get the ego out of the way. Is it? You mean in the sense of it's hard to ask people for money?
Yeah, right. I mean, think about that. I mean, when we go to those of us that have attended church, the collection plate gets passed around, and no one thinks second about it. It's just whatever you have in your pocket or whatever you've planned to give that week. It's second nature. And yet when we go to our job and we think, okay, how am I going to meet my budget this year? Okay, I've got a plan for, I'm going to write some grants. I'm going to get some major gifts. I'm going to do a direct mail campaign maybe or something like that. You've got a mix. And but when it comes to making those personal connections and making those phone calls, it's so easy to get distracted and put it off. And that's why I usually start the day off making my phone calls and calling my folks to let them know, hey, you know what? This is great. I mean, you know, whenever I receive a gift in the mail, I usually try to pick up the phone and give them a call. And that's just a best practice I've adopted over many years of this profession. It wasn't something I started out doing. And it comes from being carefully or just listening to coaches like Susan Howlett and Gail Perry.
I noticed one of the sessions is about getting graphic about your nonprofit sustainability and performance. And that's presented by K-Soul of K-Soul Marketing, Consulting, okay. Rather. Graphics in the sense of actually showing your board quite clearly what the trend lines are in income and outgo?
Yes, yes. Dashboard is what we're calling it these days. It's kind of a trend word in the nonprofit sector. And I think it's very helpful because of, again, we didn't go to school to become nonprofit professionals. So when it comes to writing budgets, when it comes to presenting the material to people who are on boards of nonprofits, it's very important that they have a very clear understanding of where the money's coming from, where it's going, how it's being spent. And I think that we in the sector we're challenged with that because we want to make it as simple as possible, but we want to be as clear and as honest as we can with reporting those numbers. And I don't know if you spent much time in QuickBooks, but accounts receivable, accounts payable, I mean, it's all in there and it's all accounted for. It's just presenting that material to the folks that you only see once a month for an hour, presenting that material to them in a very clear, coherent way is a challenge. And K-Soul has been in this business for a long time. She has been a consultant as well as an executive director, and she draws upon her experience as an executive director, consultant, auditor, and board member to create trainings like this designed to help nonprofit leaders communicate effectively across the barriers of accounting jargon and financial anxieties. Right there, see?
Your eyes can cross when you're looking at some of the numbers, that's for sure. So you want to present that graphically so it's a little more easy to follow. That said, though, I mean, given that nonprofits, again, are not charged with this responsibility of making money for their owners and shareholders, is it a little more forgiving if you present a budget to the board like, well, look, you know, we're going to run about $10,000 in the red this year, but that's because next year we're pretty sure we can get to this point. Is there some greater flexibility there? I mean, our board's going to be a little bit more forgiving about stuff like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think that, and that also comes from the fact that they understand that the just the financial challenges and the financial realities of running a small organization. It's like running a small business, but you don't have a storefront in most cases, and so yes, there are definitely some forgiveness that goes on, but I think that has to be an honest forgiveness, and it has to be an honest conversation that board members have with themselves, because ultimately, board members have that, we call it fiduciary responsibility, the ultimate legal authority if something goes wrong. So you have to be watching your executive director. You know, obviously this is someone that you have great connections with, and you want to give them that sense of freedom to, hey, we understand you're in the red this year or whatever, but we also have to understand why that is and how we're going to get out of the red. And so being able to communicate effectively and getting across that. I do want to touch on one last thing if we have time.
Sure.
So the conference goes on on Monday and Tuesday during the day, and we have 350 participants, as I mentioned. Monday evening, there's an optional Monday night leadership forum, and it's a great opportunity for nonprofit staff to learn with their board members. And so the board members don't need to attend the rest of the conference. This is a separate registration that's on our website, and we'll get to that. And it's OregonNonprofitLeadersConference.org. Or you can just enter that phrase into your favorite search engine, and it'll get right to us. But this is something the board members and staff can register for separately, and it's being Susan Howlett is going to lead a discussion called "In This Together: Optimizing Board Staff Partnerships." So there we are. We're talking about how that dynamic plays out, and she's very funny. She's very entertaining. It's during the dinner hour, but it's also a great time to. And she doesn't spend the whole time at a PowerPoint. This is an opportunity for us to really engage in a round table, literally have a round table discussion about where we are at as an organization, how we can work together more effectively in a friendly way. Because at the end of the day, we're all friends. We all want to get together and enjoy each other's company, because we do spend a lot of time, and we end up tackling tough issues. And so having that common understanding and common bonding is very important.
Is there any session at the, and again, the conference name is Lead Boldly. I don't think we've mentioned that yet, at the Oregon Nonprofit Leaders Conference. Any session in here about the state of nonprofits in the state of Oregon?
Right. Well, let's see. So we'll talk a little bit about the...
But I mean, no general, like, you know, right. Here's how we're doing. You know, there are more of us than there used to be. We're all making more money. We're making less. And nothing quite like that. It doesn't seem like that's that general in concept.
Right. We have two that delve a little bit more on the broad level, you know, as far as the state of the nonprofit sector. One's called More Money with Less Effort, Applying More Strategy to Your Fundraising, which should be fairly interesting. But I want to focus on one called Entrepreneurial Options for Fundraising. So we have a couple of folks, Brant Bresma from Dutch Brothers, as well as Jennifer Wheatley, who's the director of the Dutch Brother Coffee's Love Abounds Foundation. They're going to be talking about their customer service and how that can be brought into the nonprofit sector in a very effective way, because we want to have those great relationships with our clients.
Interesting.
And those we serve.
Learning from the profit makers. Okay, the Oregon Nonprofit Leaders Conference is April 20th and 21st in downtown Medford. Michael Stringer is the conference co-chair, and he's the chair of the conference program committee, also development director for the Mount Ashland Association. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey.